It's 1,000 degrees here. I have what is possibly a cold, but what I'm pretty sure is allergy to my entire life. And if I sound like hoarse and sexy, it's because it's not because I've been screaming. It's because of the Dacians. Wait, is it Dacians? How do you pronounce it?
Dacians, sure, fine.
I mean, that's how I pronounce it, so my way is canon. Did Petkoff do these two?
He did the first one, but you know, the second one was self-published.
I know, by Valkyrie Press.
So there's no audio for it.
Which is a real bummer. Because it would be fun to have mail and audio in audio with Petkoff.
Sure. I wonder, yeah, and it makes me wonder what'll happen with Monroe.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Cressley and Petkoff will have to
figure it out.
Yeah, have some emailing.
Sarah.
Jennifer.
I think this is going to be the first episode ever where we radically disagree on
where
a book.
Where we radically disagree on a book. So here's the thing, though. I have never read this first book. So, okay, I've read... Welcome to Fated Mates, everyone.
Unfated mates. Misfated mates.
Yeah, fated, not so much
mates. Mismated fates.
Mismated fates. Yeah, if you don't know by now, we are a podcast about romance novels. I'm Sarah McLean. I write them and I read them.
And I'm Jennifer Prokop, and I read them and critique them.
So, welcome, welcome. We are X number of books deep in our Cressley Cole extravaganza, which is season one. We are two formal episodes away from the end of season one.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, who even
bananas.
Knew we would end up being friends at the beginning of this?
And here we are.
And here we are, mated fates. And so here's the deal, you guys. We've been sort of bouncing around. We did the Game Makers series. We're doing things in the order in which they were published mostly. And this week, I'm realizing I'm breathing very heavily. So forgive me, everyone. The heavy breathing is also part of whatever's going wrong with my body. This week we're doing the Dacians together. Together at last. Shadows Claim and Shadows Seduction. Shadows Claim was a spinoff book in the Dacian series published by Simon & Schuster. Shadows Seduction was a second in that series, a companion book in that series that is that was self-published by Cressley. And I have read Shadows Seduction before and enjoyed it. I have never read Shadows Claim. So this was my
and
first time.
And I was the opposite. I had read Shadows Claim and did not love it.
Mm-hmm.
And had not read Shadow Seduction, I think because at that point, I don't actually know why I didn't read it, to be honest with you. Well, actually, I lie. It's because I fucking hated Shadow's Claim, and therefore was like, I don't want to read about Caspian the Tracker, the whiner.
Okay.
I rejected the book because I didn't like him.
All right, so whole hog, you are not pro-Dacian.
You know what? It has nothing. Actually, I like Trahan just fine. Mercio seems okay.
You are not the mates of the Dacians. Okay, I will agree with you on Caspian. What a whiny bitch.
Well, I have so many feelings. Okay, wait. Before we go further, can you and I... How are we going to do this exactly? Do you want to talk about book one and then book two? Or do you want to talk about characters?
I mean, I think that's fine. Let's just do a quick overview of book one and then a quick overview of book two. I will do book one because I just read it for the first time. You do book two because you just read it for the first time. Okay, so book one, Shadows... Claim. Shadows Claim. I was actually really grateful for this because if you remember when we did Dark Sky, I was like, who the fuck is this lady, this sorceress lady? What is happening? I don't understand the entire B-plot of this book, and I don't care. And now I understand the entire B-plot of Dark Sky. Spoiler, you guys, do not enter the IAD universe at Dark Sky because you won't know what the hell's happening. Arguably... You shouldn't read Dark Sky unless you've read the Dacian books because the story of Shadows Claim is the story of the sort of tourney, the tournament of suitors who come to fight to the death to claim, come to fight to the death to claim marriage to Bettina, who is the heir to the throne of this
Abaddon,
this demon realm. Bettina is half sorceress. She was Queen of Hearts, which means she can stop hearts if she, you know, wants to. She's half sorceress and half demon. And she is attacked brutally at the very beginning of this book. Like always with Cressley, her attack is not really on the page the way that often Cressley puts the attacks and puts assault of men on the page in a way she doesn't with women. That's the case here. But the book begins with Bettina being in the mortal world, on Earth, being attacked. And then she's summoned home. There's a summoning crystal or a summoning charm that she's summoned home, you know, bleeding and broken. And she is forced, she's asked, you know, she has to heal. It takes 60 days for her to heal. And then at the end of this healing, there is a tournament of eligible and frankly ineligible bachelors
right.
who want to claim her and through her the throne.
Right.
It's written into the book that this is a really archaic practice that hasn't been done for generations at Abaddon, but like now her uncle is just beyond furious that reckoners have come for her and stolen her sorcery powers, and he wants her to have a strong mate to protect her. And that mate is a Dacian who is on the hunt for her best friend / the boy she's always thought she would end up with. And he is an assassin. He's an assassin who can turn. I like the Dacians, honestly.
Yeah.
I like that they can turn themselves into mist. I like that they're secreted away. I like that we get more Lothair watch when we're with them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. That was actually the best part of the book for me, was Lothair showing up again at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. So this assassin turns up in this demon realm looking for Bettina's best friend. And he is immediately blooded by her, which is, as you all know, my favorite thing. And that's what I'll say about all that. Jen does not like this book.
I don't like this book. And I, you know what, I reading it again, I was really like interrogating that. Like, what don't I like about it? Do I still not like it? I would say I just still don't like it. I think there's a couple things that are like really easy to pinpoint as why it's just never was going to be my book. One of which is I don't really enjoy a love triangle and an adult romance. I think they're really common in YA, and I think they serve a really important function in YA, which is in YA, in YA, it's often a girl deciding between two boys, so it has that similar setup. But often those two boys are so different that really what she's trying to decide to do is, like, what kind of person does she want to be? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really clear that these are not just, like, you know, love interest choices. These are, like, moral choices, right? Mm-hmm. Who am I going to be? And I think that that's, like, really important in YA because YA is a lot about, like, identity development, right? So in a YA romance, I am, like, do not care about love triangles. But, like, it's fine.
So, okay, counterpoint. first of all, I would argue I would not call this a love triangle. I would call this Bettina trying to get her shit together. I did not come at this as a love triangle. I did not come at this as, I know you don't care for Bettina either. And that's spoiler, you guys, Jen doesn't like Bettina. But one of the things that I think that I kept coming back to is this idea that, like, Bettina is somebody on Twitter or Instagram or in comments corrected me and the last about Josie. Josie's not our youngest heroine. Bettina is. She is so young that there almost is a kind of YA moment in this book for her where there's that in Eloisa James's first romance novel, which now, of course, I can't remember the name of. It's like Potent Pleasures or something like that. The beginning of the book is something like, you know, the heroine knew, like, heroine's name, like, let's, I don't know, let's call her Jen. Jen knew from the moment, you know, Jen, it was at that moment when, like, her whole life fell apart, like two halves of a child's ball, right? And it was like, she would always know, like, there was a before that and an after that. And for Bettina, I really, like, fucked that up. Poor Eloisa James, like, that it's a great line. It's actually a really great first line in a romance novel, and we'll put it in show notes. But the Bettina has this life event, this traumatic experience where, like, everything she was prior to that is one thing, and she's a completely different person after that. And this traumatic experience, like, prior to that, she was living this kind of, like, fun life, going to concerts, like, basically, like, she gets attacked at pretty much, like, Coachella. And, like, she has this really interesting life where she's allowed to sort of be free and explore her sorcery side, and she's allowed to, like, put on, you know, slinky clothing and, like, live her life as a 20-year-old. And it's awesome. And then she gets attacked by Reckoners, and then she has her power stolen from her, which is, like, I mean, not even, it's barely a metaphor. It's rape. Right. And then, you know, by a group of Reckoners. And then she gets back to her home and she has to go through this sort of very traumatic healing process and sort of deal with the fact that she feels dead inside, both because she's lost her power and because she's lost her power, right, as a woman. And, like, her safety, like, there is power in a in knowledge of safety. And then she realizes, so she sort of turns to this boy who she's loved her whole life because they were raised together, brother and sister, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And she says, well, he's safe, so I'm going to mate him. And, like, it's Percy, obviously, in her mind, she's like, "Where I love him, I've loved him my whole life, it's right. A love match, we're fated mates." But at the same time, like, it's so clear that he's not, there's no way these two are getting together. And that's why It doesn't feel like a love triangle to me. That's a long way for me to say. I don't feel like it's a love triangle because I feel like a good love triangle, first of all, I think in the hand, like in Cressley's hands, and what I'm told is that in the Arcana Chronicles, there really is a love triangle.
Yes, I've heard that as well.
But I feel like a really great love triangle leaves the reader sort of saying, well, like, it could be either of them, depending upon her choice. The reader in this book does not ever think Caspian's on the table.
Sure. But I think that's why it was actually really a problem for me, because and you know what? Like, all those things you said are true. And I still found her, I don't want to say this because I feel like it makes me sound like a bitch, but I didn't care. Like, I didn't care. Like, I just wanted her to be better.
You are a bitch.
I know, and that's fine. You know what? And I think part of it is there were all these times where she was like, I just felt like I really struggled with the way that she, like, would get her way and then still not be happy. Because those are the types of people I struggle with most in real life.
That's right? Interesting.
Like, Caspian, I just want you to enter because then you're going to win me. And then he enters and she's like, oh, shit, now you're going to kill my boyfriend. And then she, like, begs and begs and begs him, like, just don't kill Caspian. And he says, OK, I've come up with a way for you to save him. And she's like, oh, no, but now he's not going to like it. And I just
OK, that part
really hard for me. Yeah. Right. And in the part where he, like, you know, he cloaks them in mist and he, like, makes her come for the first time and it's this, like, moment between them. And then, like, Caspian appears and, like, and she's like, oh, Cass. And I was like, I don't like you right now because I didn't like how she felt selfish.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to deny that there is a certain level of selfishness to Bettina, but I did not have the same visceral reaction as you did because I was sort of like, well, She deserves to be selfish. Like, fucking terrible things have happened to this girl. And on top of it, like, now this whole tournament of crazy weirdos, I mean, like trolls and demons and primordials and, like, all sorts of people who, like, you would not ever want to meet in a dark alley are competing right. to marry her. Like, she's basically a pawn in this disgusting game.
Yeah, I think that was enough. And this is, like, not Bettina's fault, but I'm not interested. Okay, let me tell you what I think Cressley was trying to explore, because Cressley, we've talked about her core story, is, like, strong women who stay strong and get the right mate for them, right? Bettina is a real departure from that. She's not strong. She doesn't feel strong herself. She really struggles with, I mean, right, like, all that stuff. I don't think there's, like, anything wrong with that. But I think what Cressley was trying to do then was, like, okay, well, what can her strength be is, like, creation, right? Like, so she's, like, a maker. But yep. I honestly feel like that wasn't even honestly all that compelling to me either. And so I think, like, whatever Cressley was, like, trying to do with Bettina to create a different type of heroine in IAD just, like, didn't really work for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that there's something, I mean, I think Bettina's a real survivor. Like, there's something, like, it's survival. Bettina's a survivor 3 months after the attack. Like,
right.
In 25 years, you know, or 10 years, Bettina's going to be a different kind of person. But, like, I actually think that what Cressley's doing here is sort of showing the sort of birth moment of a Cressley Cole heroine. Like, we don't get to see her other heroines in the moment of their trauma, right? Like, we hear the Valkyries right. look back on the past, and we say, you know, you hear, like, Lucia look back or Regan look back and say,
right.
I tried to save them and I couldn't, right?
Yeah.
And you sort of feel the trauma in that moment, but they seem grown up in a way that Bettina isn't. And maybe that's the point. Like, maybe Cressley is writing YA. She's writing Arcana by now, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe. She's sort of, like, exploring this kind of, like, new adulty kind of moment. And I don't know. Whether or not it works is very much up for debate. But I don't think, I think you're right that she's not looking to build the same, like, this is not a Cressley Cole heroine fully formed. This yeah. is a Cressley Cole heroine, like, in puberty, which she literally is.
Sure. I think the problem is that this is a Cressley Cole hero. And therefore that, like, mismatch
yes.
feels really
sure. He feels
dramatic,
real
right?
old.
Like yeah, he does.
It's really interesting because it's a very, like, it's interesting that he's a vampire. Like, it feels very, like, ancient paranormal match.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But which, not old the way Lothair feels old.
Right. And not old the way Rune feels old. Right? Just fucking old. And I liked Trahan. I did. I just feel
yeah,
like,
I, really
I think
too.
That's it. Like, if you really change the type of heroine you're producing, then I think it's, like, an interesting question. Yeah. Like, you know, how are you going to put these in parody?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on here because Trahan is a much softer, for all his, like, brute force, and he's an assassin, he's a much softer hero than
oh, yeah.
other heroes in that, you know, there's, okay, so here, we got to it. We got to the place that Jen has been talking about for, you know, since we started the Lost Limb count, right? We got to a bag full of severed heads. And, I mean, I knew it was coming because I knew there was a bag of severed heads in this book.
Right.
So I knew what was inside the burlap sack. But it was really, really interesting because one of the moments in the book that I marked was Cressley's choice to put the moment that Bettina receives the bag of heads, the tribute,
right,
in Trahan's point of view.
Yeah.
Right? So, and he thinks, so the setup is, there are these, like, four finalists or six finalists, mm-hmm. six finalists, and they each have to choose a gift for Bettina, and she's going to open it up and choose the three she loves the best.
And she won't know.
She won't know who gave her what, although she does.
Of course.
She knows who gave her two of them. But the right. So she won't know who gave her what, and she'll have to be honest and choose the three she likes the best. And those three advance to the finals, and the other three immediately are beheaded. There are a lot of lost heads in this book.
Yeah.
The lost limb count just got pretty
I couldn't even, at one point it's just going to be like heads.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just going to be heads.
So it's interesting, right? Because there's, Trahan gives her the heads of her enemies. Literally. Like,
yeah.
The four or five or six, he dreams her memories. He sees the faces of her attackers.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Skyhall and beheads her enemies and brings the heads to her as a tribute. And she doesn't know the gift is from him, although of course it is. And he's watching her open the gifts, and she's getting like matched horses and carriages full of gold and like all sorts of dead mouse tickets. And then he thinks to himself, I wish I had a chance to explain the gift to her.
Yeah.
Before.
Right.
And it was a moment where I stuttered as a reader, because that is not a thing a Cressley Cole hero thinks.
Would think. Yeah. Right.
Like, Lothair delivers you a bag of the heads of your enemies and never says a fucking word otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's
of course.
Like, you either get it or you don't. And if you don't, you're not for me. Like,
yeah.
Let this be done now.
Right.
And Trahan does not have that. Like, he's so remarkably attuned. And this is partially, again, I think this is what Cressley is doing with the Dacians in general. Because you see it again in Shadow's Seduction. The Trahan is so attuned to Bettina's emotional state. Like, he understands she has a, like, for a heartbeat, he thinks, like, oh, she's being sneaky outside in the dark. But it's just a heartbeat. And then he's like, no, she's terrified. Like, he understands, so he cloaks her in mist and takes her somewhere. Like, he's such a protector. But if you're not invested in Bettina being protected, I can see how this whole book would just not work.
When I say she's not a Cressley heroine, the other thing that I, like, really struggled with, and again, this is not her fault, but she is really sidelined through this whole entire book, right? Like, she sits in the stands and watches people fight for her, and she can't leave because she's got this summoning charm, and she, you know, everyone's, like, watching her every move.
Yes.
And she is afraid, like, rightfully so, because of what happened to her.
Yep.
With the Reckoners.
No, I'm with you. I mean, she has the access to, she's a master goldsmith who makes weapons. At no point are these weapons used. Cressley puts a lot of guns on the table in this book that don't actually get fired.
Yeah, Bettina never,
No, like, I mean, I thought, you know, when
I
she,
get it, but I just was bored.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. There's a, you know, the setup to the thing is that there's this primordial demon or primordial, what is he, a god? What is
Gurlov? Well, this is when you read Wicked Abyss again, right? It's Cian's brother. Gurlov is Cian's brother.
Oh my god.
So Sarah, like, this doesn't just change Dark Sky, this changes Wicked Abyss for you too.
Oh my god, I didn't even see.
Right?
It's a revelatory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so King of Hell. I didn't even know that. Primordial. I knew he was a primordial, and I was like, well, who's this primordial just hanging out here? Now it all makes sense. So the primordial demon, there's a primordial demon who gets put into the ring here, and the whole thing is like, if one drop of his blood hits the earth, that becomes a monster. Like, so he's basically like unkillable.
Yeah. Right.
And she, of course, is Queen of Hearts. And she's and when she says, I was Queen of Hearts, I was like, what does that mean? Was she Cupid?
Yeah.
Like, what could she do?
Right.
And what she could do was stop someone's heart, like, at will. Right?
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself, this is a classic case of, you know, again, the first time I've read this book. So there was also some joy in, I will say this, there was some joy in that. Like,
of course.
When one of your favorite writers, when you get to read a new book by them, like, there is joy in that. So,
of course.
So I'm reading it and I'm like, okay, well, so the way Cressley's going to net this, like, sort this out is Bettina's going to get her powers back and she's going to stop Gorlov's heart.
Yes.
Well, that's not how that goes at all.
No, no.
And I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, Bettina doesn't really do anything until the end when Trahan, rightly so, says, well, fuck you. It's him or me. I reject you. It's actually
she can't choose. And that, I mean, it was, I mean, even at that point, right? Like, I think the other thing I would say, I think is, like, didn't quite work for me is, and I would be interested in unpacking this, is through several books, what we've been told is that when the Reckoners steal a root power from a sorcerer, it's like stealing their soul.
Yep.
Right? And yet, when Bettina's power is restored, she doesn't actually change. And I struggled with that. Like, someone took your soul from you, and now it's back, and you aren't different?
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
But, the biggest problem... The end of this book is a real problem. I mean, like, right. It just is, because she stops Trahan's heart.
Yes.
And it feels like a real fucking betrayal.
Because it is.
She's still choosing Caspian. You know, it's hard, right? Like, I wrote a book called A Rogue by Any Other Name, and it is a similar setup where there are three characters, although they were all friends when they were children. They all knew each other. But the heroine is basically like, if you kill my best, or if you harm my best friend, I'll never love you. And so it is sort of like a catch 22, because the only way the hero can get revenge, it's a very similar setup now that I'm saying it out loud. The only way the hero can get revenge is by harming the heroine's closest friend. And so you just can't, like, there's no scenario where that can play out without the heroine being involved.
Right.
Like, the heroine has to get involved.
Sure. And I think one of the things I the second time around, right, I was like, what would I have needed to, like, make this a little more palatable, maybe? And one of the things I kept thinking was, I needed her to say to Caspian, if you hurt Trahan, it's gonna hurt me. And she never does that, right? Like,
never does, because she doesn't believe Caspian will win. I mean, like, there is a certain level. I have that thought too, and then I was like, oh no, like, what Cressley's doing here is basically setting it up where Bettina has to protect Caspian, because there's no way Caspian beats Trahan. Like, he's a millennia old, right?
Sure.
Or a millennium old, and he's a professional assassin who can turn to mist. And Caspian is a 26-year-old rage demon or death demon, right? By the time we get to the next book, then Caspian... It's interesting, because Cressley finds a really clever way of aging Caspian up.
Yeah, well, when we get there,
which is a little bit of a cheat, and we'll talk about
it. It's a big one. I didn't... Well, and we'll talk about why I... It's clever, but we'll talk about why, like, emotionally I didn't really like it, but I think it's complicated. Here's the other... Can I talk about one other thing that I thought was, like, surprisingly, they, like, did not work for me at all? If you've listened
to the podcast... Gosh, I'm so surprised.
I know. If you listen to the podcast, you know that, like, I generally am a person who kind of digs, like, oh, like, the hint of exhibitionism. But there's a ton of it in this book, and I found all of it really gross. Because it's her little, phantom friend, Salem, who is constantly watching her without her permission. And then it's Trahan's, like, cousins who watch without their permission. And I was like, oh yeah, that's not sexy exhibitionism. Sexy exhibitionism is when people are doing it on purpose.
Oh, I thought you were talking about when he fingers her under the table in his mist.
Yeah, but he does do that, right? And it's all hidden. But then later on, when his cousins come, it's clear that they were able to see through the mist. They were watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ew, that's gross. Right? I don't know. It's fine. You know what did work for me? I liked Trahan a lot. I liked all the infighting with Stelian and Victor and Mercy. You know what I mean? I liked all that, all the Dacian. I loved Ellie and Lothair showing up again at the end. It wasn't like a joyless read for me.
Yeah. I liked the look into the Dacians. I was really interested. I marked a couple of places where I was like, what's happening here? For example, the Lyce in the tournament is clearly being run by the warlocks
Yes, who we're going to see in Monroe.
But then
yes.
the Lyke says brother and then dies. And I'm like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah. Like, right. Well, when I read that, it was like this moment of human clarity, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, who? Yeah, I was really interested in those.
You know what I thought it was?
That Lyke. Tell me.
I thought it was Monroe original. I thought Cressley was putting something on the page so that if she wanted to kill Monroe off, she could have.
Interesting. Yeah. But he was clearly a just turned Lyke, so it couldn't have been. It had to be a human that was missing. Right?
What do you mean it had to be a human?
So it was a human who had been turned into a Lyke by the
warlocks.
No, wasn't it
a Lyke who had lost his...
I don't think so. I think it was a... Remember, the warlocks are taking humans and turning them into Lyke. Mm. Like, we saw that at the end
right,
of...
Right, at the,
yeah, yeah, right? So I think that these are the same warlocks who were...
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely... Yeah. There's something going on there.
Oh, yeah.
Nyx is in the stands a lot.
There's a phoenix.
And then I did have a moment. Somebody out there who listens to us will be able to tell us, and please do tell us. There is apparently a book. There is a crossover situation between Gina Showalter's Lords of the Underworld, I think is what it's called, and this. And I did have a moment where I was like, is this the book where there is a crossover character?
Oh, yeah. And I don't know either.
And who that might have been. So if this is the book, first of all, tell us what that book is, because I don't think we've come to it yet. If we have, it's been so seamless that I didn't notice. And if it's this one, let us know.
I'll tell you, I don't want to just say that I hated this book, because I will tell you a scene that I thought was really... powerful. And I think it's like one of the reasons I really liked Trahan so much, which is when he takes her out to the folly.
Oh, I love that.
And she's
scene.
Really afraid, right? Mm-hmm. She's really afraid to like enjoy this place that was hers. And he encourages her to be brave and to trust herself in a way that, like, it's not like he pushes her, you know, it's not like he pushes her off a cliff and she has to do it, right? Like,
right.
He really is like, you can do this. And I did think that that was pretty awesome, because I do think that it's, like, evidence of him being a very different kind of I-80 hero, but
He's so gentle. He's so gentle. And I love, you know, I mean, coming off of writing probably my most gentle hero, ironically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I just wrote a hero who just, like, he's so competently able to just destroy people if he needs to, but he's so deeply protective and gentle of the heroine, and there's something really lovely about that. I mean,
yeah.
I think this book works for you if you like Bettina and if you feel an affinity toward Bettina, and I think it doesn't work at all if you don't. Like, I think Bettina, the whole book hinges on Bettina.
Yes, I agree. And I think,
I'm with you. She's not a Valkyrie, right? She does not, and she's not even anything like the other sorcerer we've met.
No, right.
You know, who have been, look, you love a heroine who's in a corner. She is in a corner, but you never really get the sense that she might not be.
Yeah.
Or rather, that she won't. You never really get the sense that she is stuck in that corner.
She's not backed into a corner. She's hiding in one. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Right? And again, you make a very good case for, like, why we should be sympathetic to her. I don't want to sound like an asshole, right? Like, I get
that. I don't think anybody thinks you're sounding like an asshole.
Yeah.
I think this is a really interesting. She is young. Like,
yeah.
Think this is like paranormal new adult.
Yeah. Like, I think so.
She's figuring her shit out.
Yeah.
And Caspian is safe, and like Trahan is really not.
Yeah.
I mean, we also haven't talked about the fact that, I mean, look, stakes are not very high in this book. That's another piece of this. Like, usually
something
massive is on the table. In this particular book, like, Trahan decides kind of without hesitation that he's never going back to Dacia.
Yeah. And there's never going to be any doubt that it's going to be him and Caspian in the final round. Like, no, there's no real, even with Gurlov in the picture, there's no real tension there. I didn't think.
No, I mean, stakes are interesting because also you sort of know what's happening. It's the timeline is such that they don't know where Lothair is. Like, right. At the beginning, Lothair hasn't returned to the throne. And then Lothair and Ellie return to the throne over the course of the book. So you, as the reader, if you've come to this series with Lothair knowledge, you know, like, no way is Ellie letting Lothair, like, block Trahan from ever returning to Daisy. Like, there's just no way. You really, there's a lot that this book really feels a little bit like a Christmas novella.
Yeah, it does. It does.
In fact,
it does.
And that's, maybe this is a good time for us to move into Shadow's Seduction, because that really does feel like a Christmas novella to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it, even though the relationship between Mercio and Caspian is settled, it essentially ends on a cliffhanger, right? It's a, like, what happened to Cosmina, right? Like, right. Mercio's sister is missing at the end of it. And it's literally, the ending is like, we're going to go out and search for her.
And now, to confirm, we don't have any more books, right?
No, although I think she has said her intention is to write one more Shadows whatever for
Cosmina.
For Cosmina. Yeah. Although, who knows? I mean, that was probably years ago, right? So who knows if that's
no, but this is, there are only two. I'm not way behind.
No, I mean, no, there's these two.
I am known for saying I've never read the Dacian books, but now I'm realizing I've read half the Dacian books.
Yeah, well, okay. Exactly. There's only two of them. Okay, so in this one, Caspian, so it's really interesting. Mercio is mentioned in the first one, and basically the reason that Trahan is after Caspian, the reason he leaves Dacia as an assassin, is he has to go hunt and kill Caspian because Caspian has come into Dacia, and, like, he and Mercio basically, like, had an orgy, like, all the way through town and back again, and then Caspian left, and once you enter Dacia, you're not supposed to leave again, right? So he, like, snuck in and out and, like, broke curfew. And Caspian thought, I think Mercio would protect him, but Mercio was not able to. So at
Less not able to, and, like, doesn't seem that worried about it.
Yeah, like, he's like, don't worry. Well, he didn't. I mean, like, this, when we say it's a Christmas novella, it's because things move at warp speed and, like, any emotional tension is just, like, really quickly resolved, right?
Yep.
So what happens is, at the end of Shadow's Claim, Caspian essentially defeats, right, only officially defeats Trahan because Trahan, like, essentially, like, renounces his crown and renounces the win and is like, fuck it, I'm out of here because I'm tired. She, like, stopped my heart.
Yells,
right?
I renounce you.
Yeah.
I reject
and
you.
I don't often want to put a heroine in cold storage, but I was like, that was fucked up, Bettina. Anyway.
I mean, same.
Yeah, right?
And she doesn't really grovel great.
No, not at all, right? And what happens is, Caspian is furious, right? He's like, you took my, you know, it's better, essentially, like, it would be better to die a glorious death than live with the shame of the way that played out, right? Like, you know, I don't want to be a loser. I'm a loser now. And the only way I can get my sort of powers back is I'm going to go to this other realm, which is, like, a realm of eternal wars, the plane of
lost years.
The plane of lost years, where time moves at literally a different speed, and I'm just gonna fight and fight and fight and win my fortune, and, like, that's gonna be the way I essentially, like, get it back. And even though he's only gone for a few weeks in Abaddon time, he was there for 500 years. So when he comes back,
he's a superstar.
He's right. He's now has 5 centuries on Mercio, right? Mercio is you know, still a young man of 30, and you know, Caspian is now 500 and change, and battle hardened, and, you know, so they meet up again, and it turns out Mercio knew all along, or suspected all along, that Caspian was his mate, but because his heart was still beating, he wasn't fully immortal, right?
Yeah,
he
couldn't there's a go loophole, a matehood yes. loophole.
Yeah.
If you meet your mate before you turn immortal and your heart stops, your heart still stops.
You can't be blooded when your heart is still going.
Right. And Hag comes back. Ballery's involved. Ballery throws the stones or the dice or whatever and says, you've already met him, your mate.
Yes. Yeah. And so Caspian uses the scry crystal, goes to find him, and, like, is blooded. And they have to, like, figure it out together.
I mean, it is sort of magnificent. That scene, the blooding scene where Caspian walks, or not Caspian, Mercia walks into the bar, and he thinks he's caught Caspian before he's gone to the plane of lost years. And so he's like, and he sees him and he smells him and he's like, oh shit, like my heart isn't, like I haven't been blooded. And then he's like, what is happening? Because I'm so attracted to him. And then he ultimately is blooded in that scene. And he sort of has this moment of being just like happy. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think he even says, like, thank gods for this. Like, at least I got this. I got this person whom I love more than anything, who is not just my friend, but now also like my partner forever.
Yeah. Well, and it turns out that they had had like a sexual experience before.
I feel like we are cheated a little bit on that sexual experience because like it sort of they kiss and then the nymphs leave and then like the door closes and then like 2 minutes later, like two pages later, it's like he came in his pants and I was like, wait, he did? Like I didn't see that. Like, that didn't happen. Like,
right.
Cressley. Yeah. Anyway, that's just a side note. But the that scene in the bar where – and then he says, like, he sort of doesn't want to tell him, like, I'm – like, you're my mate. Like, I'm – you blooded me. He wants – he's, like, being clever and funny and, like, and sly. And then Caspian's like, I've been gone for 500 years.
Years,
yeah. And I haven't thought about you, which is, of course, a lie. But the – but the moment, it's so jarring because here's Mercio, like, thinking, like, everything's going to come up roses for us.
Right.
Like, because I'm a prince of Dacia, you can come back. Like, we can reign together. Everything's going to be great. We're going to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, oh, shit, you're 500 years older than you were.
Yeah.
It's a really really sound internal conflict, I think.
Yes and no. I think part of the conflict for Caspian was like those 500 years, he was like, I'm going to come back and I'm going to like find my mate and we're going to have kids and a family and I'll be able to afford that.
No,
and
he's going to kill Trahan. Because he wasn't strong enough before, right?
Right. I mean, but then he's going to, like, wanting to have kids is a big part of it,
right? Yeah, I mean, okay, look, there's a big problem here that we should talk about, which is the plot of this book is gay for you.
Yeah.
So Mercio is bisexual. Yep. I mean, he's sort of pansexual. Yeah. He's basically, like, relaxed and groovy. Caspian is a, like, I'm not into dudes.
At all, ever. Gay for you
is a problem. It's a problematic plot.
Yes, it is. And I would like to push past that even to tell you what else I think can be a problem. I have noticed, I'm going to like now talk about a pattern, which is in a series where one of the books ends up being gay, like male-male, MM, first of all, it's almost always a novella. Like, it never gets, like, the full treatment from the author.
Well, that's not 100% fair here. Because
I'm just saying.
She self-published this.
Sure.
Which is a choice.
Yeah,
I mean, it says a lot about
Her determination to
get this on the page.
Right. Here's my other, like, even, like, we could even erase that. Like, that's not even actually my main point. That's, like, a small thing, a stepping stone to what I really worry about. It's just kind of related to Gay for You, which is... It sometimes in this... In, like, a... this is what makes me uncomfortable. The setup then becomes that there's like an older, wiser gay man who like brings into the fold. Then there's like a younger virginal one. And that whole setup, like one of them's a virgin and one of them's going to like claim or dominate him. And like virginity is like a trope in a gay couple's like life. Like all of that feels like it's trying to force like a straight trope.
Yeah, it's heteronormative. Yes. Is that yes, what you're thank looking you. For?
That is the word I'm looking for. And the way that like, so the aging up of Caspian didn't really, was like cool and interesting, except that then Mercio, who has fucked his way through 10 years of everybody and never has a partner twice, is all of a sudden labeled a virgin because he's never let any man fuck him in the ass. And I was like, come on. Like, he's not sexually innocent, and I don't understand why that's like the framing that's going on here.
Yeah.
And I don't know. A lot of it, I don't know. And I've seen this before in other...
Yeah. I mean, look, this is what happens. This is what happens, right? There's... I'm stuck on this because I think Cressley is trying to do a thing here. I love the scene where they go back to Lothair.
Yes.
And Lothair's absolutely. Like, fuck no, I'm not approving this marriage. And right. everybody, or this matehood, or whatever it is.
Right.
And...
Yeah.
And everyone's like, and everyone is like, what? And he's like, what? Yes. Not because they're gay, because he's a demon. Like, absolutely right. not. And I sort of, like, I love that moment. It's like, it's a moment that I remember from my first time reading this book that I like, where it's another moment where you just love Lothair because he's so great as a character. Yeah. You can, and look, the sex piece is challenging. I get, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I think this virginity, it's hard because it's like, virginity is such a tricky subject in romance. Like, it almost feels like there always has to be, I mean, there's such a demand for there to be a student and a teacher. And it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't actually, like, in this particular book, right, there are multiple ways of virginity. Like, there are multiple... It's, like, they're both virgins in different... Like, articulated as virgins in different ways. I totally understand why that's problematic. And I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah.
Except to say, like, this was written at a time... You know, now I'm just grateful that now we have Own Voices queer books.
Yes.
Because I think, yeah, now we're starting to see, like, how queer people
write
queer
romance.
Own lives.
Right. Well, and that's, I think, the part. There were parts in this meanwhile, I still like this book a lot better, believe it or not. I mean, I liked, I like Mercio as a character. I like that Caspian, like, those 500 years don't just make him battle-hardened, but they make him a little bit wiser. I like that Caspian points out to Mercio a bunch of times that the way he tries to control Cosmina is not cool. You know, I really liked that when he said, I want a family, and how are we going to do that? That Mercio was really like, okay, that's real. Like, let's talk about that. And the line actually that I liked is, because it's like about like your demon seal, right? Which is about seed. And Mercio was like, it's because we will be closer connected, right? Like your seed and my blood. It's not about procreation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of that stuff I think like really did work for me, right? But like at the bottom of it, at the core of it, I just kept thinking like gay for you is not good.
I mean, it's not great. And it's not, and it, look, but there was also a time, like, this is another one of those moments where you're like, oh, it's of a time, right? Like, Gay for You was the plot of every single male book there was for a bunch of years there.
Yeah.
And now I think we're in a better place, right?
Yeah.
I like Mercio a lot. He's Lothair without the trauma.
Right. Yeah.
Which is fun to watch.
Sure.
Caspian never 100% works for me.
Me neither, really.
Because I think he's such a whiny baby through the first book.
And in this book, kind of still sometimes a little
bit. Yeah, well, ironically, he didn't work for me the last time either.
Interesting.
So, but I didn't even know that he was a whiny baby in the first book. I think it's tricky, right? Because I think this is a good example. It's one of those, I was thinking about this from a craft perspective, right? Like, you can turn a villain around pretty easily. I mean, many, many, many romance novelists do this as a matter of course. Like, there's a villain and then suddenly becomes a hero. It's really hard to turn around a hero who's like a milksop.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And
you didn't even know that about him, which is fascinating. Yeah.
Right? No, he's just sort of, he's kind of a whiny baby. But also, I think part of that is, it goes back to Gay for You as a plot, because like anytime a hero is like, no, I would never touch another penis, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sexuality is a spectrum, dude. Like,
yeah.
Get on the Kinsey scale.
Yeah. I think the thing too that I struggled with Caspian in this book, although there were things I liked, right? Which surprised me, because in the first book I was like, I cannot stand him. I was bothered by the fact that he was constantly throwing Mercio's promiscuity in his face, but never able to say, like, I was doing the same thing.
Yeah,
like,
They literally
met as, like, orgy buddies. And yet, somehow, right?
Well, the theory is, like, then he had 500 years where he didn't.
Yeah, I guess. But
I mean,
also,
I love celibacy, too. And this was 500 years of celibacy.
Yeah.
And, like, that it's what's interesting here is, so there's this rule, this sort of like unwritten rule in romance novels, that like once the hero and the heroine meet, he can't have sex with anyone else, like,
yeah,
on the page or otherwise. And so what it ends up, I love a celibate hero, because I love the idea that like they met and he was so moved by her that like he just couldn't for however long. And that happens here. Like, I do like the way that Cressley sort of takes, and I mean, it's not like Cressley invented this, but like, I like the way that she takes all these sort of like tropes, these sort of hetero tropes, and she like recreates them queer. But I don't love the sex part being so heteronormative.
Right.
And well, I mean, I just don't like Gay for You. I just don't. Like, I don't like it as a plot.
No. No.
Because I also don't believe it. Like, honestly, like, you've never in your life looked at another
all those
male
orgies and you never
and, like,
were, like,
said, hey, that guy is really good looking.
Yeah.
I just came from the photo shoot for my next book. And like, empirically, like, good looking people are good looking, dude.
Yeah. Right. It's, you know what? It's what I think is interesting about one of the things that you said we should talk about was, like a spin-off series.
Ah, yeah.
And whether or not we think this qualifies.
I don't think so. I don't think this is a spin-off series. I think this is, it's too close to the lore. Like, there's too much. It's like, if you think about spin-offs, right? Like, there's like, Happy Days is a spin-off of, help me, do you know this? Happy Days is a spin-off of like the restaurant
something show. Yeah,
if Eric were here, he would know. Anyway, there's like, if you think about the way TV shows spin off, they literally spin off, like, and there's nobody, there's a whole new cast of characters,
right?
And there's maybe one character who, like, it's Frasier and Cheers, right? Frasier spins off into Seattle and like he lives with
his
weird brother and his dad, and they're, was she a maid? That's a weird dynamic. But whatever, Daphne. Yeah. And, like, we never really interact with Cheers. Like, maybe once a season, like, Norm comes to visit, right?
Right, right.
This is too embedded in the lore. There's mention of the Accession. There's...
Yeah.
Nyx is there. Lothair... I mean, Lothair is there constantly.
Sure.
Right? He lurks there. We know, like, we already... We know all the rules for demons are involved. Like... If this were a true spinoff series, it would be
you could read it independently. Yeah.
Well, also, it would be set in Daisha.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it would be...
Right.
It would be separated. And truthfully, we don't see much of Daisha at all.
No, because Daisha's boring and there's nobody there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, there's just like the one person from each house.
No, honest to God, this is a group of marketing people going, Lothair was so popular. How do we...
Yeah.
Like, what do we do? How do we separate out these books that will have Lothair in them?
Yeah.
And so they did. And I actually think it's too bad because I think a lot of people like me just were like, I cannot do another series.
Right.
You know, like, right. I'm just going to be an IAD fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm on the record now of saying, like, I really like these books. You know, they do their problems. Absolutely. Would those problems be solved by more rune? Yes. I don't know how, but they would be.
You're like, fine.
More rune, please.
That was like the name of the castle in Shadow's Claim. And I was like, I was really interested in that. Like, what was going on there?
I know, rune's involved. Rune's involved.
There you go. So Sarah was, no wonder you loved it.
He's everywhere.
Yeah,
No, I loved it. Look, is it, yeah. I realized I haven't updated my IAD spreadsheet for a long time.
I know, I haven't either.
But like, look, are Caspian and Mauricio and Trajan and Bettina going to be like top seated? Yeah. No, they are absolutely not. But there is, I say it all the time about other people, like the worst Cressley Cole book is better than like 95% sure. of other reading experiences for me. This was not the worst for me. And I really, I mean, like, it, I felt like I was visiting an old friend. Like, I was so happy to be reading a book by her that I haven't read before. And I think after this, ironically, like, I don't know if you're, I mean, this is a good question. Do you feel like you're going to, like, you're done with Cressley for a while?
Oh, you mean, like, after the podcast?
Like, will you do a reread?
I reread The Game Makers a lot.
Yeah.
I do find it harder to reread IAD just because it's...
You're talking to me. I mean, Sweet right? Ruin, I've read it a thousand times.
I am often a scene rereader, but I don't think I could scene reread these books. I reread the whole book.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's just more of a commitment.
I think I am. We are not... Do not add us. We are not doing a podcast on it. But I think actually once this is over, I'm going to England in a couple of weeks. And I think I'm going to bring the Arcana Chronicles with me and do that.
And see, I am not interested because I... Because
you want your books to be sexy.
Oh, I hear they're plenty sexy. It's not that. I don't like a love triangle. Like, not interested. I don't like first person present. It's just got like everything going against it for me.
Yep. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, and also, any kind of YA reading for me feels like work.
Yeah, well.
You know what I mean? Sure. And so it just kind of goes into a different part of my brain.
Well, I will report back either way.
Yeah, good. Maybe it'll be emergency books, though. Like, there are books, aren't there books you keep?
Well, I mean, it's right? really funny because I don't know how, I think I just, like, checked out on the idea of reading the Dacians. And...
Yeah.
When I was reading this, I was on vacation. I was in Charleston and I was like in the hotel room. And my sister was like, happy birthday to my sister who turned 50 in Charleston when we were there. And my sister was like, we're here for my birthday. Are we going out? Like, should we go do a thing? Let's go look at a thing. Let's go eat some food. Let's go, you know, do whatever Charleston right. has to offer. And I was like, well, we could, or I could just lay on this bed and read this book by my favorite author, you know, like
yeah, right, sure, it's like a gift, right?
And it was great. So
yeah, I am happy that was your experience.
It was and I'm sorry that you did not have that experience, but one of us has to be wrong.
It'll be me. Fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
So this is Fated Mates. We are one episode away from the end of IAD, you guys. It has been a ride. Wicked Abyss is next in 2 weeks. Cian and Lila are with us. It's the best. I'm not lying. It is the best Beauty and the Beast retelling I've ever read.
It's really good.
It is really bananas. Yeah. Horns everywhere. Kate Claiborne read the whole thing through her fingers. And it's great. So it is great. Find us again in 2 weeks for Wicked Abyss. Next week, we'll have an interstitial episode. Find us on Twitter at Fate of Mates, on Instagram at Fate of Mates Pod. Like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And then when we start season 2, you will be notified when we start season 2. But we're starting season 2 in September. So, and we have a little, we have a couple little surprises up our sleeve for you between now and when season 2 starts. So
that's right.
We'll drop some fun joy into your ear holes between now and then. We love you guys. We'll see you in next week.
Can I make a really random recommendation?
Please.
If you liked the part of Shadow's Claim where Bettina is creating, if you're like interested in that, a really great literary novel, litfic, was a book called The Animators by Kayla Ray Whitaker, I think. And it's these two women who are creating like comics together or like film. Maybe it's like animation, like animators. And it's like... like, that book, I think, will have ruined me forever for, like, what it's really like to, like, be in the mind of an artist.
Mm.
And I think it's why I was like, I see what Cressley was trying to do, but it wasn't as good as The Animators. So if you like that part of that book, right, like, her, like, being in her studio and creating, you might love The Animators. It is not a romance, and I, you know, it's, like, sad because it's litfic, but it was really, really good.